favorite that you've known for a long time. Could it be that you're falling for me, and in your dreams I'm the one you see? Little girl, if you love me, don't keep it to yourself. You know you shouldn't try to hide things you're keeping down inside. You gotta trust in somebody. Don't you know that you can trust in me? Come on and trust in me, little girl. Now what is it you wanna say? What's in your heart?
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Baby Boomer Favorites. I'm your host, Janine Kaysen. And today, my in-studio guest is a guy who is a music historian, a singer and writer. He had a successful 45 in 1965, of which we just heard side B called Don't Keep It to Yourself. Side A is titled Blue Ribbons, and that was written by Jackie Duchanan. He is the only child of Eleanor Powell and Glenn Ford, and he wrote a book about his dad called Glenn Ford, A Life, which came out last April. Please welcome to the show, it's Mr. Peter Ford. Hello, Peter.
Well, hello, Janine. I'm happy to be here. I haven't heard that song, that cut, I have not heard since 46 years ago.
Oh, yeah. My. You know, tell us a little something about that 45.
Well, it was, as you say, I was a fan of music of all kinds growing up. And, of course, I was a rhythm and blues guy.
Uh-huh.
And in the early days, I was listening to all kinds of what they would call race music. And of course, that is the antithesis of everything, rhythm and blues. But
it's fun. Oh, it's fun. So California, surfy type thing.
Surfy. We had our surfboards and our woodies, and we would go to the beach, and everybody was blonde and young and tanned, and oh my goodness, long ago and far away, wasn't it?
Well, it is fun. It's a fun 45, and I absolutely love it. And about your dad's book.
Yes.
Tell us about...
Yeah, right.
That's what I meant. His book about his father, Glenn Ford, who I am huge, huge fan of Glenn Ford.
Well, it's doing very well. It's put out by the University of Wisconsin Press.
I'm from Wisconsin. That's why it's so successful.
And so is my wife. Ooh. My wife was born there in a little place called River Falls, Wisconsin. But... it's doing very well, and I'm very pleased. If anybody's interested, I direct them to go to the glennfordbio.com site, Glenn with two N's, and that is the book site, and you can learn everything you ever wanted to know or didn't want to know on that site.
It's a great book.
Yes,
it's a great, great stories. All the fun your dad had. Boy,
yes.
He had fun.
Yes, he did. And that's why he got divorced.
And that's all those juicy stories with the Gilda, Rita Hayworth, the gals.
Yeah, many gals.
And
many
all
gals.
Those wonderful movies.
Yes, no, he made some great films. And he was a great actor. And I celebrate his acting ability.
Yeah. My two favorite are Pocketful of Miracles and Dear Heart.
Yes.
Are just my two.
Two of which I was in, by the way. So.
Oh, that's right. You had little bit parts?
Little bit parts, yes. I was in so many of these little bit parts that I memorized every one of my lines to this day. So I could, you know... I never had anything much bigger than a bit part in his films, but it was fun to be there and work with those people, certainly, you know, Geraldine Page and Dearheart, and, of course, Bette Davis and and those people.
Ann Margaret. Ann and Margaret. Tell us about, you almost had a date with her, right?
Well,
with
my dad, yes, Ann was a little older than me back in 1961.
That was her film debut?
Yes, it was. And my dad thought she was attractive, as did every other man, I'm sure, in those days.
A little bit, yes.
And he wanted to fix me up with her. And I said, oh, Dad, I said, no, I can't. I can't do, you know, I she's out of my league. You know, really, I'm just a, you know, kind of a, you know, just a high school kid. But he was determined to have me go on a date with Ann Margaret. That would have been something for the history
Wouldn't
books.
That have been cool?
Yeah, that would have been cool.
Way
but I,
cool.
I chickened out. Not that she would have wanted to necessarily, but I never got beyond that, let it get beyond the...
Why didn't he go out with her?
Yeah, no, knowing his repertoire, he you know, how did that one get away?
You know, she was the only girl in Elvis's life that gave Priscilla a scare.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
That's
oh,
the
wow.
only one where she was concerned because he really fell in love with Anne, but
wow.
he still had Priscilla there waiting her
see.
To become of age for
I
the
see.
Marriage.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
But that's another story.
Yes, that's...
that's a biggie, but it's another story.
Right.
Another
we're touching on music there, but not quite the way we
exactly.
want to today.
Exactly. Viva Las Vegas.
Oh, yes.
Oh,
yeah,
boy.
Yeah.
They were a hot couple. Yeah. We're talking hot.
Yep,
hot, hot,
yep,
hot.
Yep.
Well, you're kind of... going to be the host, and I'm going to play the co-host, because this is all the music that you picked out that has significance in your music world.
Yeah, you're
world.
Right. In my musical life,
mm-hmm.
yes. And again, I when I grew up, I'm an only child, and I grew up in a place in Beverly Hills. We were living on a street that was not paved, and it was very, very rural in those days. Now, of course, it's the center of everything.
Mm-hmm.
But back then, it was very rural, and there weren't a lot of kids to play with, and music became my refuge, and I just loved my music. And in the book, you know, when you read it, my little growing up years were not necessarily the happiest years. So I retreated to my room, and I had my record player. And of course, I started buying 78s when they didn't have 45s back in the day. But I gravitated to the R&B, or what was called race music, black music then. And now some of these things we're going to play. I told you, Janine, that I'm not a scholar. Or a writer about rock and roll. I just am a fan like you are.
Me too. Just
a big
fan.
But I love it. And so I am just a rock and roll R&B junkie. And I have many of my original records. And believe me, living in Beverly Hills to find the Orioles and the Ravens, and we're not going to talk about him necessarily directly, but Johnny Ace Records, it was a tough thing to do. But I mercifully had parents who had the resources to indulge me, so I was out hunting
sure
hither and you know, high and low for these things. So anyway, and of course we might get time to get to Rock Around the Clock
we will.
And that is the culmination, I guess, of all of this stuff that my involvement with that particular song.
Yeah, well, the songs that you picked, when you emailed those to me, it's like, yes, because these are like the roots.
Yeah.
A lot of these songs were covered by other white artists later on, a lot by Bill Haley. He covered everybody's original songs that were the black music prior to that,
yes.
You know, the people who wrote it. But you just picked out some gems, which I absolutely love. So the first one we're going to hear is by Wynonie Harris, Good Rockin' Tonight. So you want to set that up or wait?
Well, yes, it was recorded in December 1947. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, obviously before my time. I was two then, but I didn't, of course, you know about this record in those days. But it's a seminal, very important record. It was written by Roy Brown, and Roy tried in the early days to get Wynonie to record it, and he wouldn't do it. Roy wrote it on a brown paper bag, and he took it everywhere, and nobody would touch it. And finally, he recorded it. It didn't really go anywhere. But then Wynonie Harris did it, and we're going to play that version right now. It became a classic.
Tonight,
night. Gonna hold my baby tight as I can. Tonight she'll know I'm a mighty man. Have you heard the news? They're good at rocking tonight. Oh, meet me in the alley behind the barn. Don't be afraid, I'll do you no harm. Baby, bring my rocking shoes, cause tonight I'm gonna rock away all my blues. Have you heard the news? They're good at rocking tonight. Everybody's gonna rock tonight. I'm gonna hold my baby tight as I can. Tonight she'll know I'm a mighty man. I got the news. Everybody's rocking tonight. Well, Elder Brown, Deacon Jones, they've even left the happy home. They'll be there just you wait and see. A jumping and a stomping at the Jubilee. Hey man, they're good at rocking tonight. Sweet Lorraine, Sioux City Sue, sweet Georgia Brown, Caledonia too. They'll be there jumping like mad. Hey sister, ain't you glad? We got the news, they're good at rocking tonight. Hoy, 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 they're good at rocking tonight. Hey, 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 everybody's rocking tonight.
Hoy, hoy. If that isn't rock and roll, I don't know what is.
Well, a lot of people think that this is the first rock and roll record. Of course, that debate will go on and on. We're going to play one.
Sure.
We're going to play one later.
Yeah,
that many people. But you listen to this. This is 1947. It was done in Cincinnati. Again, written by Roy Brown, a famous jazz guy, but they were celebrating the end of World War II,
mm-hmm.
and that's what the celebration was. I mean, they're rocking and rolling because the war is over and America's coming out of that horrible.
Yeah, and
time.
They're using the term rockin', but rock and roll term hadn't even been used at that
not
point.
Yet. So this was the in my mind, this to me is could be, and we'll have to let your listeners decide, could be the first rock and roll record. But then what I told Janine I wanted to do is to play music from two of the seminal groups who came a little later. And there was many black groups in the day. Mainly the Ink Spots were the
were the
ones that really were trailbreakers. But they had a very, very mellow sound. And with the Orioles, which we're going to play now, It's Too Soon to Know, and the Ravens coming up, Count Every Star, they were two offshoots of the music that was really popularized by the Ink Spots. So maybe we can play the Orioles
now. And you know what's
now.
Something that's kind of cute, maybe? All these bands, these groups, they have like these bird names.
Oh, that's true.
The Orioles,
right.
The Ravens,
oh,
the Flamingos,
many, many
the Penguins.
Right.
It's like
right,
all
right.
These bird names.
Right. Exactly.
Okay, well, let's hear It's Too Soon to Know by the Orioles from 1948.
Does she love me? It's too soon to know. Can I believe her when she tells me so? Is she fooling? Is it all a game? Am I the fire or just another flame? Oh, once I did love would break my She may be just acting and playing the part. If she don't love me, let her tell me so. I can't hold her if she wants to go. Though I'll cry when she's gone.
Sonny Till, lead singer of the Orioles, and as I said before we went into that song, the Inkspots, they had a big hit called If I Didn't Care in 1939.
Beautiful.
And the Inkspots were the first really popular harmonic black group, and they spun off this group, the Orioles, which was the first real R&B hit that came out. And then the next one we're going to do is the Ravens, and this song, which is also a classic. Again, came through the Inkspot genre, but it captures a whole new feel, so why don't we play that?
Well, count now, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Star and darling, when you do,
This was, to many people's minds, the first doo-wop record. So we have, you know, we have the spinoff with the Orioles from the Ink Spots, and then we have what could have been the first, you know, rock and roll record. And now I think many people feel, and again, we'll have to challenge your listeners to get in touch with you, this could be considered the first doo-wop, which, of course, has the bass line, high falsetto, and then the group harmony. And, of course, we're going to be playing some later that will speak to this one. But
yeah, that's, you know, I've never heard that song.
Really?
And that's, I'm sure I've heard it, but I've never played it on my show, and I'm not real familiar with it. And it's absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah,
the harmonies are beautiful.
And again, this was in the late 40s, too. So, but anyway, we're on to, I guess, new things now with Rocket 88.
Oh, Rocket 88. Now, that song I know very well.
Right.
And that's, it has to be the 88 keys. It has to be with the piano thing. And
well, actually, it was the Oldsmobile. It was the Oldsmobile at Rocket 88.
Oh, really? Yeah. There was a Rocket 88 Oldsmobile?
Oh, yes. That was the whole thing. And this was a group that was composed of two major people, mainly Ike Turner.
17 years old.
Yeah, he was. Willie Cazart and Raymond Hill and Jackie Brinston. And there's a long story, which we can't get into now, about this song.
Tell us some about it.
What happened was, it was really Ike Turner's groups. It was his group that it was, you know, it was Ike Turner's group who was the people who sang this song, and it was the Royals. And so when they went into Sun Studio in Memphis to record this, somehow Ike did too, and somehow Jackie sang lead on too, and somehow Jackie Brinston, who was just a player in his band, ended up doing too. And so when they sold the rights or the masters to Chess Records, Jackie Brinston's name came. It was put out by Jackie Brinston and the Delta Cats,
mm-hmm.
and this drove Ike Turner crazy, because it was his group and Jackie Brinston was just a player in his band, and it caused tremendous problems for everybody. But this song is by most people's example, although I beg to differ because we played what I thought was the first one earlier. This was 1951, I believe, and this song was, many people feel, the first rock and roll song.
Well, Sam Phillips considers this the first rock and roll
song.
Well,
he had a vested interest in it because he recorded it. But they, on the way to the way to the session, from what I have understood, that the bass guitarist dropped his amplifier and he broke the cone. And they were sticking all kinds of paper in it, and his playing now sounds more like a saxophone than a guitar, and that sound was startlingly new back in 1950.
Yeah, well, I always thought the 88 was because of the piano parts in that.
Well, no, it was apparently the story was is that on the way to the session they kept breaking down. They got arrested a couple of times, and they on the way to the session they got stopped, and somebody in a Buick 88 helped them fix their car. Now that could be apocryphal, I don't know, but believe me, there was a lot of tension between Ike Turner and Jackie Brinston.
I think whoever comes in contact with Ike, there's a lot
of that's true. Yeah, he had a
just
record.
Ask Tina.
You're right, absolutely so. But anyway.
Yeah. There's a rim shot. Well, this, I love this song, so let's hear Rocket 88.
You have heard of jalopies, you've heard the noise they make, but let me introduce my new Rocket 88. Yes, it's straight, just one way. Everybody likes my Rocket 88. Baby, we'll ride in style, moving all along. Smart and designed, black convertible top, and the gals don't mind. Sporting with me, riding all around town for joy. Blow your horn, Raymond, blow! in my rocket and don't be late. Baby, we're pulling out about 8:30. Going round the corner and get a feel. Everybody in my car's gonna take a little nip. Move on out, oozing and cruising along.
Is such a great song, 1951 with that, and Bill Haley did this song
he
too.
He covered it. Yes, he
covered
did.
It too.
Yeah, he did. And he, actually, when Bill covered it, by the way, I misspoke. It wasn't the Royals. It was Ike Turner's Kings of Rhythm. So somebody out there is going to say, "Wait a minute, it wasn't the Royals." So I'm telling you, I now know it wasn't too. But Bill covered it, and Bill was kind of like a comedian country singer. He had that little lock of hair and that came down his little. I don't know, alfalfa look that he had.
The alfalfa look.
And he was going nowhere, and he recorded this song, actually, and put it out, and it did pretty well as a cover.
It was just a couple months later.
Yeah, and it did pretty well, and it was this song, that his cover of this song, that got him into more of the rhythm and blues stuff, and of course, that translated later into a pretty interesting career, which I had something to do with, which we'll talk about.
We're good. Yeah. And the other thing is, back then in 51, when he did this song, it was Bill Haley and the Saddlemen.
The Saddlemen, absolutely
correct. Not the Comets.
Right. Yeah.
So cool.
Yeah.
Okay, well, on with... Oh, wait, should we do one of my bumpers? Okay, no. Stu's going no. Okay, because he... Wanted to add those in. It's, Stu the engineer over here.
I see. God bless
you. You have to get used to your new format and give those to me in advance.
Okay, sweetheart.
So do another song and we can use a bumper coming out of it.
Okay, speaking of bird-named groups,
yes.
We've got the Flamingos.
Right. We had the Orioles, the Ravens, now the Flamingos, and there's so many more.
There are. Yeah. And they did the I Only Have Eyes.
Yes, that's
for
they're known
you.
For that. But their first hit was this song. Called Golden Teardrops.
Eternity, I'll remember. Hi there, this is Gary Owens, and this week the Fickle Finger of Fate Award goes to Janine Kaysen and Baby Boomer Favorites. Put that in your funkin' wagnalls.
From the probably the worst tenor to the greatest tenor, Tiny Tim.
Now,
to the great Johnny Carter, who just sang Golden Teardrops.
It is a beautiful
song.
The harmony changes are incredible.
They were the first real, out of Chicago anyway. There was two great groups that came out of Chicago. It was the Flamingos, and of course that was the lead, was Johnny Carter. Johnny Carter went on to found the Dells. The Dells were, that was his group too. A tremendous, tremendous singer. And the Moonglows came out of Chicago as well. And so both Chess records and Chance records. But I tell you, that song is just one of my all-time favorite records. And I had that as a kid. And every time I hear that thing, it just affects me greatly.
It's beautiful. Well, thank you for introducing that to me, because I didn't know that song. There's a few of the ones that you picked that I had not heard. Of course, I've heard them before the show, because I put them together and was listening to them going, oh, these are fabulous.
Well, I just love that one.
But on just back to Tiny Tim for a second.
Yes, I'm sorry.
I love Tiny Tim, but I have to say, no matter how falsetto-ish his voice is, he is on pitch.
Yeah, no, he
was. He's really a good vocalist.
Yeah.
And if you hear his regular voice, but he, even with that falsetto, he stayed on pitch.
Yes.
Not like that. What was that guy, William Hung or something?
I don't know.
Guy.
Yes. Oh,
that's
yes.
Where it's all off pitch.
Right, you know? Right. No, you're right. you're right. We're gonna form a group with Pee Wee Herman and Tiny Tim. I'm sure between the two of us, we can form the most bizarre. And we'll probably make a fortune too, them on the road.
You know? Are you kidding? It would be like blockbuster with those two. I love Pee Wee Herman also.
Hey, Peter, when you were doing your 45 back in the day, and your dad was there, did he ever get an inkling to want to sing himself?
No, he never. He never sang. Yeah, not ever. No.
Not even in the shower?
No, I don't know about that. But no, that was one thing. He was in a musical, though, actually, with Bob Wills and the Texas Playboys and Ann Miller, a film that never went anywhere, but it was a Go West Young Lady, 1941. And he got to know Bob Wills and the Texas Playboys. And I think, as I mentioned on Stu's show when I did it, he loved country western. And, of course, Bob Wills and those guys were, the Sons of the Pioneers, all those early groups. And so that was probably
I love that music.
Yeah,
I
do too.
The tumbling tumbleweeds and cool water.
Oh, I love it too.
And
yes, I can listen to that day and night myself.
Do not forsake me, Tex Ritter.
Oh, yeah.
Since
no.
You mentioned my show, we should mention Peter's going to be on my show right before Christmas again. He's going to come back, and we're going to talk more about his dad and his life.
Yeah.
And Peter's life.
Well,
yeah.
That's true.
Well, like I said, I'm huge. A huge Your Dad's fan.
Well, thank you. I love music of all types.
And your mother.
Except rap. I can't abide rap.
Hey.
I'm sorry.
Thumbs up here. Yeah. I don't get it. I've tried to appreciate it. I've tried to watch it and listen going, I have to find something redeeming here, and I can't. And that's Stu.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just can't handle it. And the new country western stuff I don't like, but give me the old cowboy stuff.
Oh, sure. Yeah, or Apache Klein or any of those.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah,
best.
And Johnny Cash. Come on.
Yeah,
right. It doesn't get any better. Okay, now, what's up next is got to be my absolute favorite thing you picked out, because I love Big Mama. So, you talk about it.
Well, here's a song by a 300-pound black lesbian. I mean, we're very eclectic in our tastes around here. But she was tremendous. And, of course, this was in many ways in one. That was a double entendre. Right? I didn't even mean it. But she was... she was great, and of course that you know, that was a Lieber and Stoller song. And of course, if anybody out there wants to read the greatest book that I've read recently on rock and roll history, it was Hound Dog by Lieber and Stoller that was written. It's just a tremendous book, and they talk at length about this song. But they were two Jewish kids out here in L.A., and Big Mama was sent here from the East to actually work with Johnny Otis, who was out here as well. And Johnny had been, you know, he had these two young Jewish kids named Lieber and Stoller who were hanging around wanting to have him do one of their records. And so he called them up and he said, basically, okay, guys, come over here. I got this lady, you know, Big Mama Thornton. She's not had a hit. And what can you do with her? And they basically, in about 15 minutes, wrote... They heard her rehearse, and they wrote this song in about 15 minutes, took it in to Johnny Otis, and in fact, he was on the credits for a while. If you can find Big Mama Thornton's Hound Dog and find Johnny on the credits, that's a rare album.
So that would be a 78 has a 78, that, yeah, has right, that right, on yeah. the thing.
And,
wow.
And anyway, she recorded this, and it became a huge hit.
Well, let's hear it.
You ain't nothing but a hound dog.
It's a great
1953.
Song.
1953.
Yeah.
Man. And then every song Elvis took, you know, he made the
well, right.
pure
but,
gold.
It, but it's, but you know, when you listen to the lyrics, you listen to the lyrics of this song, and Elvis,
it
doesn't make any sense.
He cleaned
sense.
It up.
Well,
yeah.
He did. He changed it.
He just
it.
Made it into, it was just Elvis.
Yeah,
it didn't, you know, he could have just done anything and he would have been great,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And everyone would love it. But Big Mama.
Yep.
And
yep.
She did that ball and chain that Janis Joplin did later. Oh, man. I could listen to Big Mama all the time.
And she was tremendous, yeah.
Yeah. Literally.
Literally.
She's got that sound. She's got that sound. Okay, what do we have up next?
Well, Work With Me, Annie. And I guess this one was Hank Ballard wrote this. And he took it to Federal. They cut this in 1954. It was released in February of 54. And it first came out, I knew we were going to do this show and I was trying to do some research, and this was the one by the Royals, actually. And they changed that group to Hank Ballard and the Midliners, mm-hmm. because the five Royals were a group that existed, and there were some threats of lawsuits. And anyway, they changed it to Hank Ballard in the
Midnighters. You know, if his name was Mallard, he'd have another another bird name.
And again, right? If anybody can find a copy of Work With Me Annie with the Royals name on it, that is also a collector's
item. Oh, that is. Absolutely. You know who has all these? Dr. Demento.
Oh, I bet you he does. I bet you he does.
He's got them all.
But again, the Royals were discovered by Johnny Otis, and this song was the first black song or race song that crossed over and became a big hit with white kids.
And yeah, so and it was banned in a lot
it
of
was,
it because this is risque,
right.
As a lot of Hank yes. Ballard's and all the offspins of this song.
Oh yeah,
Annie had a baby, the answer, and the Wallflower, and Henry's got big feet and all that. But I tell you, I love Hank Ballard. And he wrote The Twist.
Yes, he did.
And recorded it before Chubby got his little chubby hands on it.
Yep.
And it's just as great. But, you know, they sound similar on both of those
recordings.
Well,
this was a very scandalous record
when
it came out. Oh, yeah. And I tell you what happened. As long as the black kids were listening to this, it didn't matter. But as soon as this crossed over into the white world,
mm-hmm.
that's when the Legions of Decency and the Catholic, they said in Boston, nuns were going through the street and taking this, actually snatching it out of the stores to protect the white youth
their
from
poor
this.
Little babies.
So the more that that happened, of course, you know, me and my friends at this age, I was buying these records at this time. And of course, when I heard that this was, you know, scandalous, and, you know, I had my candy bar videotapes that I had hidden. So, you know, my father had some of these risque films that I discovered.
Uh-huh.
And when he was on location, I found out he had an 8mm projector. So I'm playing this, watching Candy Bar, and playing this in my father's bedroom when he was on.
I know, it's great.
Oh,
Yeah, Hank Ballard. I love, he did that Finger Poppin' Time and so many great hits.
Yes, he was.
So many great hits.
Right. A local L.A. guy, too. Which
oh,
is
he was. Yeah, he, a local guy.
Yeah, a lot of that.
Let me ask you, have you met any of these artists that we've played?
Let me think. No, I don't think I don't think I did.
Well, I know you didn't go on a date with Big Mama.
No. Like... no, she wouldn't have wanted to go on a date with me. But no, maybe a little later. I met the Comets, Bill Haley's group, but we're going to get, but no, I never did meet any of them, but I was a big fan of theirs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Hank Ballard stuff. He's a fabulous writer and stuff. He did so many great hits.
Yep.
Super. And up next is a song we all know and love, but not by Bill Haley and the Comets.
No. Right. Yes. Shake, Rattle, and Roll. The interesting thing about this song by Big Joe Turner is that when we're going to close, I guess, about Rock Around the Clock. But when Richard Brooks, the director of Blackboard Jungle, the film that my father made, that song Rock Around the Clock was in. It's a long sentence, isn't it?
Yeah.
He came to the house, and he did take three records of mine with him. And one of these records was the one we're going to play next, which is Shake, Rattle, and Roll, the original by Big Joe Turner.
1954.
Get out of that bed, wash your face and hands. Get out of that bed, wash your face and hands. Well, you get in that kitchen, make some noise with the pots and pans. Well, you wear old dresses, the sun comes shining through.
This is Paul Peterson, and you, me, and my dad are listening to Baby Boomer Favorites with Janine Kaysen.
I love Paul. So do you know Paul Peterson?
He's a good friend. I've known him a long time.
He's so great. Love him. Well, back to Big Joe Turner's version of Shake, Rattle, and Roll. Now, the words are quite different from Bill Haley's, because he had to clean up... He had to do a white version.
A white version. He did the Pat Boone version, you know. Exactly.
The Wonder Bread to the spicy rye.
And I didn't explain when I said that Richard Brooks, the director of Blackboard Jungle, came to the house and took some records. What they were looking for, Janine, is a song to play in the movie Blackboard Jungle. And my dad knew that I had a collection of, shall we say, unusual music for a white kid living in Beverly Hills. And so Dick came to me, actually, and said, what do you got? And I played him a whole bunch of stuff. And it was this record and Joe Houston's All Night Long, which was more of an instrumental piece. But I had not seen the film. I didn't know what he was looking at. And, of course, Rock Around the Clock, because I really liked that one. So those are the three records they took back to MGM. And, of course, Rock Around the Clock was the one they chose.
Yeah, and it was the version by Bill Haley, by Sunny Day.
Yeah, and the Sunny Day and the Night. You're right.
They did that first.
Yes, they did. That was first. That Bill actually did it the year before. He cut it in, I think, April in New York City at the Pytheon Temple. It's still there. There's a plaque on the street to commemorate the place where that song was cut in New York. But he did it the year before, and it got to be... Actually, I take it back. Sunny Day and the Nights did it the year before, and it didn't go anywhere. Then they cut it, and it came out that summer, and nothing happened with it. It got to number 26, I believe. So, but it kind of fizzled away. But then as soon as they put it in my father's film, Blackboard Jungle.
Oh, it went nuts. And then look what's happened with Happy Days. Absolutely. And wasn't this the B-side of the record?
Yes, right. The A-side was 13 Women and Only One Man in Town. And this was the throwaway side. And as usual with these B-sides, they spent a lot of time rehearsing 13 Women. And the premise for that song is just a bizarre thing, that this guy is a survivor of a nuclear holocaust and he's the only one left and there's 13 women. I mean, you know. So, no, that's what it's about. 13 women and only my, that's what the song is about.
And he's the only man.
Yeah, he's the only man. Poor guy.
Poor guy.
Yeah, you know. All
the women were all Big Mama.
Yeah, yes, or Ann Margaret's, you know.
Yes, that's I know.
At any rate, this was the B-side, and of course, I had bought,
the guy was Liberace.
Right. You're right. Well, maybe then Big Mama and Liberace could have gotten together. Oh, my, where are we going with this show, Janine?
I know. Don't you love it?
Yeah, we are laughing. I hope your listeners are laughing, too.
Oh, they are.
They're picturing what you just said, and it's disgusting.
Oh, my goodness. But anyway, I had purchased this Bill Haley record called Crazy Man Crazy before this. And then I bought 13 Women thinking, oh, boy, you know, I like this guy, Haley. And I hated that song. I turned it over and I loved the B-side. So it got into the movie and the rest is rock and roll history.
Oh, it's major rock and roll history.
Yeah, it's major
rock and roll history.
A friend of mine called me up a couple of weeks ago and said, Peter, I don't know if Janine or many of your listeners do, but there's this fellow whose name is Little Steven, Steven Van Zandt. He was in The Sopranos, and he also has Little Stevie's Underground Garage. And he
played with Bruce Springsteen.
He was one of the original members of the Bruce Springsteen E Street Band. Right. Mm-hmm. And I met Little Stevie back in New York about 5 years ago, and he did a show about the seminal events of, here I'm using that word again, the most important events of history and rock and roll. And bless his heart, he referred to me, because I met him, as the coolest kid in Beverly Hills in this show. He had archived it, and somebody said, go to find this show, and I went and listened to him, and he was talking about this, my finding this song that got into the movie is one of the 10 most important events in rock and roll history. And I thought, whoa,
yes.
You know, along with I was also at the festival up in Monterey in the mid 60s. I was there when Jimi Hendrix played the guitar.
You were at the Monterey Pops.
I was at the Monterey Pops.
Oh.
Yeah, I was there.
May I touch
you? Oh, you can. You may.
Jimmy's my God.
Oh, yeah.
My
And
God.
I saw him do that. I saw him on stage. I don't know how I had some great seats. I remember right near me was Wilt Chamberlain. He was the tallest man I'd ever seen in my life. He was like a tree there. But I remember, I remember because I was a basketball fan, and I remember Wilt being there, and I remember all of those great groups, and I never forget Jimi Hendrix playing that guitar that night.
Starting it on fire.
Yeah. It was an incredible experience. So I was at that one, and I was the, you know, the, I guess the, the link here to a lot of rock and roll history by virtue of this song. But it's anecdotal and it's incidental. But had it not been me, I'm sure something else would have triggered it. But I happen to be the lucky guy who gets some footnote in rock
well,
and roll history.
Well, yeah, you should. That's a biggie.
Yeah,
because your dad is Glenn Ford. He was starred in that movie,
right.
And then this song was the theme, the title
yep.
piece that we first yep, heard yep, with it. Yep. Now, do you know? Any connections or know why they Happy Days did this? Was this because this was the landmark rock and roll 50s
I think so. Yeah,
kind of
right.
iconic
right.
song of the 50s?
And it was interesting when my father played Jonathan Kent, Superman's Earth Father, in the first Superman movie. You will also hear it playing in the background when my father had a very small role in that film. He had a heart attack and died in that film.
Right,
and
right.
But Richard Donner was the director, but you'll hear it there too. When I think it's when he was running the young man who played it wasn't Christopher Reeve.
Christopher Reeve,
but
yet.
The young man who is running chasing the train. You can hear Rock Around the Clock, I know he put it in there because of me, but because of my father in Blackboard Jungle. I know there's a synergism there. Absolutely.
Oh, how cool! Let's hear the all time favorite.
1, 2, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, rock. 5, 6, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, rock. 9, 10, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, rock. We're going to rock around the clock tonight. Put your glad rags on, join me, hon. We'll have some fun when the clock strikes one. We're going to rock around the clock tonight. We're going to rock, rock, rock till broad daylight. We're going to rock around the clock tonight. When the clock strikes 2, 3, and 4, if the band slows down, we'll yell for more. We're going to rock around the clock tonight. We're going to rock, rock, rock till broad daylight. We're going to rock around the clock tonight.
Well, I mean, everyone in the world knows that song.
Yes, they do.
It's just,
yeah.
And I have to say, there's this container of Comet Cleanser sitting in the studio. And it's only because when Jane Withers comes here, I want her to autograph it, as Josephine. And so I'm thinking Bill Haley and his comets. It's not.
Yeah, right. It's a different comet.
A different comet. Well, Peter, you have to come back and do the show again.
Well, thank you.
Will you please come back?
Oh, I'd love to.
You pick the greatest music, and it's so much fun.
Thank you.
And you're so knowledgeable of it, and you're such a cool guy.
Well, thank you. That's what little Steven said.
And Liberace.
Yes.
And let's plug your book one more time. It's a fabulous book.
Please. Glenn Ford, A Life. It's on Amazon.com. Can't miss it there. And it's GlennFordBio.com is a website, so please come and visit and read it and let me know what you think.
Oh, yeah, it's great. Okay.
And we'll be talking about his book again right before Christmas. He's coming back to do my show.
Sure will, and he'll come back and do my show. And
why don't you just move in?
Yeah, I should.
The instrumental we're playing is
Green Onions.
Green Onions.
Booker T and the MGs.
Great song. Well, thank you again, and bye, everybody.